All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome, awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy to understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today. All right. What's up, all you good citizens of Crypt Nation? Welcome back to another action-packed episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. As always, folks, I go nowhere without my notorious compadre, Mr. Pizza Mind. Pizza Mind, what's cracking in your corner, brother?
It's an amazing time to be in the crypto markets right now. We are blessed with an overabundance of amazing price action, coins to choose from. It's like popcorns in a popcorn machine. And often we get overwhelmed trying to figure out just what do I do? There's so many things to choose from. Well, the good news is you really can't go wrong unless you're still on zero for some reason and sitting around going, I don't know, this crypto thing's is real yet or not. That's the only way you can really lose right now. But Bryce, I look to you for guidance in my trading life. Can you give me some words of wisdom to manage my risk better, to pick winners? Like, what are you thinking?
You know, I always have my sayings. One of my sayings is, you know, plan your trade and trade your plan, right? 90% of the market out there that are retail guys have no freaking clue what they're doing. They're buying things randomly based off of a tip from a friend. They're not even doing baseline things such as, you know, going to CoinGecko.com and, you know, looking at liquidity for a certain coin before they even think about placing a market order. They're not looking at a chart to see where prices come from. So there's very small little things that people could be doing day in and day out of just planning a trade and, you know, how long you want to hold it for and what your expected return is. And at what point is there like an invalidation of your belief that this thing is going to go up? And when are you going to cut your losses? So that's kind of how I plan a trade.
Well, how do I plan a trade better? You know anyone that can help us with that?
And that's exactly the point that I'm glad that you got to, because today we've got truly one of the smartest minds in actually trading the markets day in, day out. And trading as a business, not just as, you know, oh, hey, like I'm going to go trade and try my hand. But no, I'm going to structure and manage risk on an institutional level for undisclosed sums of money. But who we have today is the head of trading at Block Tower Capital, Avi Fellman. Welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be on here. Thanks, Bryce, Pizza Mind, for having me on. Excited to get this convo rolling.
Yeah, man, there's so much going on in the markets. You know, we're recording this today, Tuesday, March 9th. Bitcoin kind of broke out of a pretty key technical resistance that's been holding us right around $52,000. It's looking like the institutions are kind of putting up a wall of money that's, you know, supporting price every new way, right? Every time there's a new consolidation zone, price just seems to kind of want to float up. And that's kind of the natural tendency, or maybe we could even say the trend of the market right now. But Avi, we want to kind of get inside your mind, like you personally, high level, you know, what is the stage of the market that we're in right now?
Yeah, man, it's been an absolutely, absolutely wild year. I mean, look at it, right? 12 months ago, I remember this day, like it's the clearest day in the back of my mind. I was trading March 12th, 2020, when the markets just absolutely fell out from under themselves. Bitcoin starts the night before at $7,700. And then by the next day, it had traded $3,300 on BitMEX and somewhere around that on Coinbase. That crazy infamous 50% drop in the S&P, you know, it was down 20% too. And just to think that we've come from that all the way here to at time of this, $55,000 Bitcoin's trading, it's just nuts to me. It's just absolutely nuts. I mean, I've been a Bitcoin bull for, you know, a long time, but even this last year has been a lot to kind of take in and see, like, oh wow, like we've come such a long way. It just feels like a completely different world almost.
It really is.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is a completely different world.
Especially just the past few months. I mean, we had a great second half of 2020 in the crypto markets because it was the only show in town that was still on. But now, even as the rest of the world starts to open up and, you know, we're still a long way away from normal, I think just the gains we've seen January to March have dwarfed even what we saw, you know, April to December of last year. And yep. The question that everyone's keep happening is this the end? Is this the big blow off, or do we still have more to go? Where are we at in this cycle?
I think we're in the, if I were to, you know, if you guys play baseball, I think we're in the sixth inning of a bull run. I think that we're deep into it. We're in the meat of it, but we've still got the last third of the game to go. And this is where the game gets real crazy, because every bull run has that phase where things just absolutely start to not make sense anymore. And we're getting into that territory here, but things still kind of make sense. Like if you look at the revenue
metric, the insanity metric,
they kind of make sense. But if you look at like revenue multiples for DeFi protocols, like you look at the revenue multiples on Sushi or revenue multiples on Aave and Compound, they're high, but they're not like, oh my God, how is this thing trading 10,000 times higher than the fees that it generates? Like, it's not like, oh my God, what is going on? This thing is a $40 billion protocol. It doesn't have anything to back it. Actually, there's maybe one of them out there, but there were way more of them out there in 2017. So we haven't reached that like absolute insane phase. That doesn't mean that they're not going to be pullbacks, but for the time being, I'm pretty confident in saying that we've got some space to go. And going back to the March comment, I think we have that space to go, thanks to the Fed, thanks to the government for extremely aggressive monetary policy that is just day in and day out, you know, having conversations with people that are getting more and more worried about inflation, that are actually getting worried about their purchasing power. They're rebalancing their portfolio into Bitcoin. Price action is reflecting that, and I don't see that necessarily stopping anytime soon. So I'm pretty confident in saying that we're in the sixth inning, we're not in the ninth inning.
Yeah, I think what would be really helpful just to show people, like, I think that, like, in this cycle, you know, I agree, like, you know, we're probably in the middle stages, but you've been trading these markets for quite a long time. And I think people are always kind of like, where did we even come from? Like, has it always been this way? What sorts of advancements have made trading as an institutional asset manager have made it easier and doable and, you know, efficient that weren't there when you started trading and weren't even there in 2017? Because the picture we're trying to paint is like, wow, now the groundwork has been laid for institutional asset managers to come on board, right? Today, we just saw, you know, a big announcement from JP Morgan that they're having a structured vehicles product. So what's really fundamentally been the biggest changes?
Oh man, I mean, since 2017, huge amount of change. And I'll say that for the institutional space, it's gotten so much easier to buy Bitcoin, just so much easier. It's crazy. In 2017, I mean, liquidity was everywhere. It was fragmented. It was on OKEx. It was on Huobi. It was on, you know, a little bit on Binance at that point, late 2017. It was on Coinbase. It was on Bitstamp. And it's still fragmented today. But back then, there were very, very few people that managed to piece all the puzzle pieces together and that managed to actually execute on all these different exchanges. And so if you were an institution or if you were even a person that wanted to buy $5 million of Bitcoin, it was so hard to do that in any meaningful way without pushing the price up like crazy on one exchange. I remember in 2017, anybody who was around, you used to see arbitrages in Bitcoin that were like 5, 6, 7% wide, and they wouldn't close for hours. It would be trading, you know, $700 higher on Gemini than it was trading on Coinbase. And you'd sit there and you go like, this makes no sense. And fast forward 4 years, 2021, you have people like Tagomi, you have people like OmniX, you have people like CoinRoutes who are merging all these exchanges together into one. They're allowing institutional investors to come in to buy as much Bitcoin as they want. You have people like Cumberland, like Genesis, like Galaxy, who are hooked up to every liquidity venue that exists. If you want to buy $100 million of Bitcoin, perfect. Call up Genesis, call up Galaxy, call up Cumberland, tell them, hey, I want to buy this much, and they'll work the order for you, and it won't even move price that much anymore. And it's crazy because I actually think that from the execution angle, it's almost as bad for retail as it was in 2017. There are not a lot of really good tools for retail. You can kind of suss them out if you're a good programmer. Like if you're a decent programmer, you can find some tools that are good for you. But just like retail focused tools to access all this spread liquidity is not there. But on the institutional level, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. And it's different, right? Because if you're a retail participant in the equities market, if you submit an order, your broker has fiduciary duty to you to basically execute best price. They got to give you best price. If they don't give you best price, then they're in big trouble. It's not true on Binance. It's not true on, you know, on any of these exchanges. They don't have any fiduciary responsibility. If you mess up and accidentally pay 30% over spot, like you're paying 30% over spot, they're not going to refund you, which is why it's so important for retail, in my opinion, to take advantage. And if you're new to the crypto market, it's just so important to take advantage of all the new info that's out there. In my opinion, just like you were saying, like CoinGecko, you know, you have Token Terminal that gives you all these revenue multiples. You've got CoinMarketCap that'll give you, you know, basically any coin under the sun alongside CoinGecko. Although CoinGecko is really good for the depth. Like you've got to utilize these resources to make sure you're doing it correctly. Because the information has gone way, way, way up for new participants in the crypto market. That I'll say. It's just a world of difference from 2017. Just world of difference.
I really couldn't agree more. One of the things I was going to say real quick about retail tools, one tool that would be extremely helpful as well to kind of solve that fragmented liquidity for, you know, retail guys would be Voyager, right? So if you go to investvoyager.com, right, you guys could access a retail brokerage. It was founded by the number two at E-Trade, a guy named Steve Ehrlich. He's been on the show a bunch of times. And that's a phenomenal platform. If anybody who's listening wants to go and get connected to 50 different exchanges or something like that through one brokerage account. But sorry, Aaron, I cut you off. What were you saying?
No, not at all. That's a great point. And I'm glad you brought that up. But what I was going to ask is, you mentioned something about tokens being overvalued versus insanely overvalued. But how exactly do we value a crypto token? You mentioned revenue multiples, which is something that we've never talked about on the show before. Can you break that down a little bit for us and talk about how one might apply something like that to determine if something is overheated and needs to cool off, or if something is really actually undervalued and could potentially get some more eyeballs on it?
I think it's probably easiest if I break this down into three types of tokens in my mind, and then we can kind of go from there. So the first type of token is just your pure monetary asset. And that's your Bitcoin. That's your Litecoin. That's your Dogecoin. And this thing doesn't have a revenue. It's just a thing that exists that other people have said, oh, this thing has value. And Bitcoin, obviously, the most people have said have value, which is why it's the largest cryptocurrency in the ecosystem. I mean, personally, I think Bitcoin has absolutely tremendous value. But at the bottom line, you have to admit to yourself, like, the reason it has tremendous value is because people respect it for all of its inherent properties being censorship resistant, being, you know, fungible good, fungible currency that you can use to buy goods, being, you know, fully distributed so that it can't be shut down by any government entity, and it's non-seizable as well, right? So there are all these like fantastic things about Bitcoin, but at the end of the day, like the reason that it has value is because people believe that it has value. So it's like, okay, so these are your monetary assets, and with monetary assets, really the only approach you can take to like overvalue or undervalue are two things. One, it's comparative valuation. So take Bitcoin's total market cap, for example, and say, okay, it's $2 trillion. It's $1 trillion right now. I think that it should be 1/4 of gold, and gold is $8 trillion. So I think Bitcoin could be $2 trillion. So you can use comparative valuation to talk about these monetary assets. And that's all fine and good. And then the other thing you can use is just like market metrics to figure out, oh, like, is Bitcoin going to trade $45,000 first, or is it going to trade $80,000 first? And for that, you kind of have to like, because that's like noise in the grand scheme of things, even though to your portfolio, it might feel not like noise because those are big moves. But at the end of the day, like, that's all just like markets, and we can get into that. But so that's Bitcoin, that's monetary assets, that's Dogecoin. That's all they're valuable because people think they have value. Then what you have are you have your networks. So you have your Ethereums of the world, you have your Cardanos of the world, your Phantoms of the world. And these are your layer ones that people build applications on top of. And right now, Ethereum is the largest layer one. And I think you can reasonably value these things, not in a monetary sense, but again, in a relative value sense, but kind of looking at the value of all the applications that are built on top of them right now to figure out, okay, like, is this thing actually have meaningful usage? In 2017, literally nothing had meaningful usage, like zero, nada. Like there was nothing useful about any of these, you know, networks. Ethereum was barely being used. It was only being used for ICOs. You know, Cardano wasn't used at all. Like EOS wasn't even live. Like half these things weren't even live. Fast forward to 2021. The most important thing for a new market participant to understand is that these things are actually like being used. Ethereum is being used. Binance Smart Chain is being used right now. Phantom is being used right now. Cardano is still not being used. But besides that, you can take a look at the applications that are being built on top of layer ones and think to yourself, okay, because there's X amount of market activity on this layer one, I think that it should be valued highly. I personally think Ethereum is likely to be valued more highly in the future because that's where the vast majority of, you know, activity is taking place. But things like Binance Smart Chain, for example, or Binance BNB is accruing meaningful value, I think, because a bunch of people are moving to build on Binance Smart Chain. And we can get into again later if we want, like, why do people choose to build on one layer one over another? I think the most important thing to remember right now is that Cardano is not being used that much, and that basically a lot of other layer ones are being used a lot. So all my like new friends that get in, they're like, oh, Cardano's dope. It's like, yeah, the tech's interesting. Nobody actually uses it. So like, let's temper ourselves here.
Cardano was my favorite token when it was 3 cents. Now,
yeah. I mean, you know, like, look, I respect the team. I respect Charles. I respect what he's, you know, accomplished. But at the end of the day, like, if you're an investor, you can't be caught up in like, in passion. You have to look at the cold hard numbers. The cold hard numbers are telling me that there's a lot more activity everywhere else. So
to just put that in, just to frame that, Cardano has the same valuation as eBay right now.
Yeah.
Yes, eBay.com and Cardano have the same market cap. So,
and smart contracts
highlights exactly what you're talking about.
Smart contracts aren't even really live. I mean, you can transfer tokens on the network, but it's like actual like DApp smart contracts aren't live. So, anyway, moving on from that, this is where we get into revenue multiples. They're the third section. So to recap, we had the monetary assets, Bitcoin, Dogecoin. We had the network assets, your Phantoms, your Cardanos, your Ethereums. And now we're talking about the application assets. These are my favorite because you can actually value. So you've got your sushis of the world. You've got your unis of the world. You've got your aves, your compounds, anything that falls under DeFi, even like your keepers of the world. These are all applications. And these tokens, when you buy them, essentially what you're buying is you're buying a pseudo equity. So you're buying something that theoretically may or may not give you rights to cash flow now or in the future. When you buy sushi, you do get rights to cash flow. When you buy uni, you're buying the speculation that you might get cash flows in the future because they haven't turned that on. So what you can do is you can actually look at that and you can say to yourself, all right, sushi is valued at X billion. Let's keep the numbers easy. Sushi is valued at 5 billion. And every year, right now, if I annualize the amount of fee revenue that goes directly to sushi holders, which you can look at on tokenterminal.com, fantastic resource. Go there, look at the amount of revenue that sushi throws off. For simplicity, these numbers are not accurate. Let's say it throws off $1 billion in volume. Then your price to equity, price to sales ratio is 5 to 1. And there are companies that trade at a larger PE, price to equity, right? Than that. So price to earnings, sorry. And so basically what you're looking at is you can actually value these things similarly to valuing companies. And so when I said these things are not absolutely nuts, that's what I mean.
And you could comparative multiples as well. Yep. So you could see like company's revenue or multiple or whatever is like maybe 43. And you're like, okay, well, that's fucking high. What's backing that? And then you could see crypto is like 2 and there's so much more room for growth. And you could kind of say, well, I think this thing's actually relatively undervalued. I'm going to take a small bet on something like that. And we actually have a great place to see if that invalidates because we could get out of the trade if that doesn't go according to thesis, right?
You nailed it. That's exactly right. And there are actually a lot of protocols out there right now that I won't name because it'll be a fun little gem hunt that are throwing off like pretty good revenue multiples. And so why I think we're kind of in the sixth inning is because when we're in the ninth inning of that bull run, there's not going to be a single protocol that exists that has reasonable revenue multiples. They're all going to be crazy overvalued. It's all going to be nuts.
Nothing top is in sense. When the revenue multiples are out of hand. You heard it here first, folks, and you're tracking it on tokenterminal.com.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and honestly, that's one of the biggest things that I'm going to be looking for is like when things just get stupid on that front.
That's amazingly insightful. So how do we take advantage across the board? I mean, we don't have quant services and PhDs living in the room next door. Well, most of us don't anyway. Can you offer and explain at a high level Can you explain at a high level some common trading strategies that anyone can use in crypto and kind of how it works?
Yeah. Oh man, there are so many. And there is a big difference between an investing strategy and a trading strategy. Yes. And one of the things that I'll say from the outset is that the way that I've seen the most people go broke in crypto, the most people, same exact pattern, they buy asset A because they think asset A will pump. All their friends have bought asset B. Asset B pumps instead. They believe in asset A, but they buy asset B because all their friends had already bought it. Asset B dumps. And then they start the cycle again. Basically, you're just chasing pumps over and over and over and over, and you're not letting yourself. Now maybe asset A was wrong, but the more you cycle between bets, the more you're constantly flipping, 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 looking for the next thing, the more likely it is that you're just going to go broke.
Absolutely.
Because normally what people do is they only buy the thing, the next hot thing when it's already going up. And the thing about crypto is that yes, it is reflexive, and reflexive means that price engenders price. So if something's up 5% one day, it's very likely to be up 5% the next day, or it's not very likely, but it's more likely to be up 5% the next day than 5% down the next day because crypto is like reflexive in that sense. But if something is up 100% in a week, it's very, very likely that people are going to start selling into that. And so what I see a lot of people do is they'll FOMO in and they'll just like continuously FOMO into assets and they'll lose a lot of money. So that's probably like the number one thing that I'll like say, like, don't let that be your trading strategy. Like, don't let FOMO be your trading strategy. Pick an asset, hold it,
and kind have a value. Something there as well.
Yes.
Because this is great because this, like, that perfectly summarized something that I wish I had explained to every listener on the podcast, like, so long ago. That was the perfect mentality. I highly encourage everybody to like rewind right now and listen to that entire kind of spiel he just said about, you know, asset A to asset B, friend tells you about this, and you just, guys, be patient. And the point I wanted to make before I let him move back on is, you know, one of my favorite quotes is from a book called Reminiscences of a Stock Market Operator. And it's by, you know, a trader named Jesse Livermore, who had a pseudonym named Edwin Lefebvre, right? And so he said, and he made millions and millions and millions in the stock market back in like the 1910s, 1920s. And he goes, if there's one thing that I could tell anybody who's trying to win in the markets, it's that it was always my sitting that made me the most money. So it's all about patience. And, you know, Warren Buffett says it time and time again, you know, the market's a mechanism. Just it's designed to transfer money from the impatient to the patient. So guys, if you're in a coin and it hasn't gone exactly as planned, you know, you got to be patient. You got to be patient.
Yeah. I'll say that patience is absolutely key, but also it's key to make sure you're not like just making really bad investments.
Yeah, so in a complete dud.
like you can also just be like a really bad investor, and you just have to be honest with yourself about that sometimes. But I can tell you that like it's better to find out that you're a bad investor by being patient than it is to find out that you're just being greedy and flipping coins and losing all your money that way. Because at least you've learned something about yourself.
And after all, isn't that why we're all here?
Exactly. Honestly, in a bull market, rising tide lifts all boats. I would definitely encourage your average market participant to not trade with their entire stack. And I would also encourage your average market participant to have a healthy portfolio, almost like a healthy diet. I think you don't want to be allocated entirely to small caps. You don't want to be allocated entirely to your moonshots. You don't want to be allocated to things that only you believe in either. The consensus plays are sometimes consensus plays for a reason. So for example, but let's say you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, but Bitcoin's not going to go up that much. Like, what about all these other coins, you know, that are out there that are going to do 100x, that are going to do 200x? And it's like, well, maybe they will, maybe they won't. And yeah, sure, maybe Bitcoin's priced in a lot. So let's say Bitcoin has another 5x. Let's say Bitcoin has another 3x in it. If Bitcoin has another 3x in it, I guarantee you that the top DeFi assets will also do fairly well on that. They'll also do fairly well on that. I can't necessarily guarantee anything. That's not financial advice. But these DeFi assets they'll do fairly well. And so if you want to allocate to higher risk plays, it probably makes sense to, you know, have at least some amount of your portfolio in these DeFi assets. Say like, you know, 30 to 40% in your unis, your sushis, your aves, your compounds that all have like a 10x potential in them, that have a 20x potential in them. And then from the rest of your portfolio, allocate to, you know, your moonshot coins. And then be patient with those coins as well, right? But I think the key is that you want to have a thesis as to why you're going in a position. And that thesis can range from anything to, I think that people are going to buy this over the next 3 days because there's an event coming out, which is a very common trading strategy. Oh, there's an event that's coming out. I know that it's going to be really big. Nobody else knows about this event. The price is not up a lot. I'm going to buy it and then sell it after the event. Very common trading strategy. Another thesis example would be, I think that an asset has huge amount of locked value in it. So something like Farm, for example, which has $800 million in TVL and total value locked, but only has $100 million market cap. I'm going to buy this because I think it's undervalued on that metric. And then I'm going to wait for it to confirm. So that's another form of a thesis. Or a third thesis is, this is a new form of DeFi primitive. So like Alchemix, for example, Alchemix is pretty nutty. What it allows you to do is, in exchange for yield, you can get an upfront payment. So let's say you are lending out your DAI at 20%. Alchemix will give you a loan upfront for that 20%. So you don't have to wait a full year to get it. And then that'll pay you off. And that's like kind of a new thing, a little bit untested. I don't endorse using it because I don't really understand the smart contract risk behind it right now. But let's say that you look at that and you say, oh yeah, this is pretty sweet. I have a thesis that this is going to be used more, than you buy that. And you're like, I think that this is going to be used more in the next 3 months. And if it's used more in the next 3 months, it's going to go up. So then you have some frameworks for understanding like this trade is going well or this trade is going bad. Because that's the most important thing, is you need some sort of framework for understanding, is this investment working or not? Like, did I make a good decision or not? And so you need some sort of like thesis or framework around it. The main sort of like frameworks that, you know, hedge fund managers like me will run is, especially with like hot money, it'll be, I think I know something that the market doesn't know. So I'm going to act on that, that maybe I've like read a blog post that's, you know, public, but like not a lot of people have read it. And so I know that an event is going to happen that the market doesn't seem to appreciate that much. Or I've, you know, pieced together the puzzle and I say, so for one example of this was Luna. The CEO of Luna tweeted out that they were going to burn, you know, a couple $100 million of UST. And if you understand how Luna works, you need to actually buy Luna, destroy the Luna to create the UST. And he didn't say that he was going to buy a ton of Luna to create this UST. But if you knew the mechanics, you understood that was what was going to happen. And so you could like buy Luna because you knew that was about to occur.
You knew there was a supply shock that was kind of inevitable.
There was an inevitable and public supply shock, but the market didn't quite understand it because the market doesn't do like deep fundamental research or really any research for the most part. It's one of those things like you just kind of have to find your edge. And I think right now the vast majority of edge comes from A, like understanding that users are going to use a protocol before they use it. B, and that can be like institutions coming to use Uniswap, or it can be crypto native people using like the small protocol that you found. Or B comes from event driven trading, or C comes from market structure trading. And then D obviously is just like crypto by itself, I think, is just a rising tide lifts all boat situation here. So we're just in general, like but that's like a source of beta. That's not a source of alpha. That's not a source of like edge in the market. That's just you being here early.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was kind of your beliefs, or I don't know if beliefs is the right word, but you know, how you think about a concentrated portfolio versus a diversified portfolio, especially in an asset class like crypto, which is so tightly correlated, where I'm kind of the belief or of the school of thought that the diversification of assets in crypto is almost a myth. Unless you kind of, you know, are very, very sophisticated and could have, you know, different sorts of crypto bonds and crypto cash flows and lending products and stuff. But, you know, a lot of people that are out there right now are thinking, oh, well, I have 100 coins, so I'm diversified, so I'm okay. And I could tell you firsthand that that's not diversification, because all of those are going to dump when one thing dumps, right? Like when Bitcoin dumps or Ethereum dumps, you know, you got to be out. So, you know, how do you think about that? Is it just, you know, an actively managed cash position? Is it, you know, how do you tinker with that? How do you think about that stuff?
Portfolio construction in crypto is something that, you know, I tackle every single day. And it's probably less useful to take this sort of approach for somebody that's not an active trader, but I'll go through it anyway. And then I'll talk about like more of the passive approach and then diversification. Diversification in general is a complete scam in crypto. Like it's like if crypto is going down, like you're going to lose money. You're not diversified because you hold 100 assets. If Bitcoin's down 70% tomorrow, everything's going to be down 70% tomorrow. Sorry. It's just how it works. In this market currently, I think that at some point in the future, that's going to change. But for now, 100% true. And the reason is because all these assets are really tightly held. So everybody that holds a crypto asset is likely to hold all these other crypto assets. So when these assets fall down, they're likely to get scared and sell the ones that haven't fallen. So it just like pushes everything down. Diversification is not really a thing. I think personally, you want to concentrate wealth to grow wealth, to grow wealth, and then diversify to keep it. And so if you have like 10 crypto assets and you are highly convicted in one crypto asset, it does not make sense to put 10% in each of those assets and claim diversification. If you are so highly convicted in one asset, it actually kind of makes sense to put 50% of your portfolio in that asset and then spread out your lower conviction plays with a little bit less. So I think that's something to keep in mind. You know, you should definitely size based on conviction. You shouldn't really size with any sort of thought in the back of your mind of, oh, I need a diversification benefit. No, size on conviction in this market. So how I do it is I look at, because I'm all in crypto, like completely all in crypto, the fund is all in crypto, like I'm all in crypto. The way that I think about it is, what's my cash balance and what's my crypto balance? Okay. So pending, you know, a variety of proprietary metrics that we come up with, we kind of try to think, well, what's the next like 2 weeks of price action on crypto going to look like? Is it going to be generally up or is it going to be generally down? And then based on that, I'll set like my cash exposure. So, okay, I want to be 20% cash. And then once I've set my cash exposure, I go to my Bitcoin versus alt exposure. And I say, okay, what you have to realize about this market is that these things go in cycles. Bitcoin will rip and altcoins will do badly. And then Bitcoin will come down and then altcoins will do very well. And so my job as a trader is to try to time that cycle. When is Bitcoin going to do really well? When are alts going to do really well? And so when I think Bitcoin is going to do really well, I'll say, okay, I'll be 75% Bitcoin, 25% alts, because, you know, keep some alts in case I'm wrong, because, you know, I'm not always right. If I think alts are going to do really well, I'll say, okay, I'll have 75% alts, 25% Bitcoin. Because again, I might be wrong. And if Bitcoin does really well, I want some Bitcoin to buy alts on that dip. So, okay. So then in the alt bucket, I think to myself, what are my highest conviction bets? Like, what do I really believe in? Like, and then I'll take out those trades. Here's one example, actually, of where a trade may lead to you having a diversified basket, even though I don't really believe in diversification. Let's say your thesis, and this was my thesis in January. If ETH does really, really, really well, then Uniswap gems that are priced really, really small, they're going to do super well too. I just don't know which ones are going to do really well. And so I think ETH, there's going to be this wealth effect where a bunch of people are going to make a lot of money on ETH, and then they're going to use that money to buy gems. I just don't know what gems are going to be. So, you know, we bought like 30 different Uniswap gems and we treated it kind of as like one trade. We were like, okay, this is our Uniswap gem. And then, you know, that worked out really, really nicely. But that's like one example of, if you have a thesis, you can diversify within that thesis. But like, you should definitely have like concentrated theses, in these situations. But yeah, so like again, top down, it's decide on your Bitcoin cash exposure, decide on your Bitcoin alt exposure, and then within your alts, decide on your alt exposure in here. And generally, I'll say that it is very rare for me to hold any cash in this market environment, because there's a lot of there's a lot of good stuff that's going on, and I'm fairly certain that, you know, over a 3-month time period, we're going to see higher prices.
Yeah, that's amazing advice. Portfolio construction is a difficult thing to come across. And something you said just before, I think I know something the market doesn't know. If you're not saying that to yourself before you buy something, that's a small moonshot. Like, why are you really buying it? And what you really need to think about is, I think I know something the market doesn't know yet. If you're buying something that's so obscure that it's on no exchanges, it's never going to see the light of day, it's been sideways since 2016, looking at you, Aeon, it's probably not the best thing to buy into, even if it has great tech. It's got a community of, you know, 2,500 people still. It's probably not going to be the next big thing. So definitely think about that before you buy something thinking, you know, you're buying the next Ethereum.
And the other thing I want to highlight here, which goes very under the radar to most people, kind of like, I guess most people that get into the crypto community don't really understand how important community around a coin is. They're it's the water that they swim in, and they're the goldfish. They don't even realize that the more powerful the community, like, that actually has a huge bearing on the, you know, price behavior of that. And like, what's so interesting, you know, there's so many coins that might have the best tech and might have this, but they don't have any users. And so you could see that there's not really, you know, much price action or price potential. But do you guys, you know, Pete and Avi, do you guys have any metric trackers for community growth?
Yeah, community is really important. I think that the one thing that you should never, ever, ever underestimate is the power of like a crazy strong community. And you see that in like 4chan pumping like SNX for a really long time, like the SNX like community, like really loving them. Link is like the most obvious example of this, where like a solid core group of people like really pushed Link up a ton. And then the Graph is kind of experiencing this too, to a certain extent, which is part of its crazy run. And I think one of the best ways to do this is to look at Telegram chats, is to look at mentions on 4chan, is to look at mentions on Reddit, and is to look at like Reddit communities, and then go into the Discord and like talk to people, ask questions, poke around, see if they can answer your questions in a reasonable manner. are the people in there friendly? Do they, you know, are they only concerned about price? Like, or are they actually like, do they care about the project? So I think it takes two things. It takes like some analytics where you're looking at actual just pure numbers, but it also is a little bit of a feel. It's how do these communities react to things? How do these communities interact with new people? Are these smart communities? Are these dumb communities? And obviously you want to be betting on the communities that like have a lot of buy-in and that are good communities that welcome new people, that answer questions. So I see those in a lot of new assets.
Yeah, very well said. And if you want to look at a tool for data analytics, I use Into the Block, which shows me how many different wallets over time are being created, flows between wallets. You know, I want to see if all the tokens are concentrated amongst a few large whales that are eventually going to dump on everyone, or if everyone's got a bunch of shares of it and the founders and the team, they only have their fair share. Back in 2017, we had a concept that we call pre-mine, where when a new token was created, the entire supply would be minted at once and under the team's control, and then they would distribute it out as they saw fit. And this was like a cardinal sin back then to pre-mine your token. Like even 10% was just thought to be a cash grab. But now it's done so often that for these proof of stake tokens, it's not really as big a deal anymore, but it's still something that's worth looking at. Into the Block also has a great metric of showing how many people are in the money. So you can see if this thing has just been a money pit for everyone over time and they're all just waiting to finally break even and cash out, or if there's going to be meetups at the Bahamas someday with the people you're talking to on Discord.
That's wild.
I don't know. If it's anything like 2017, there are not going to be any meetups for me, but hopefully 2021 will be a lot better. 2017 was rough. I was in so many Discords, and everybody learns, you know, trial by fire in a sense, and they all just like went absolutely dead. And so I think this year, a lot of the people that I've been trading with, a lot of the people that I talked to have done a lot better. Everybody's kind of like learned their lessons from 2017. A lot of people I know have already cashed out life-changing amounts of money, and it's sitting in cash because they have experienced 2017. They know how bad it can get.
So and they used the market as the tool that it was supposed to be, and you know, they won.
Yeah.
They used it. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about specifically, and I hope you're the right guy to talk to about it. If you're not, you let me know. But it's this concept of a gamma squeeze from these market makers. And it's been trending and people have been tweeting about it, about prices going up because market makers who are generally supplying the market are, you know, short gamma and they're getting squeezed. What the hell's going on? Can you give like an explain like I'm five or maybe explain like I'm 15 years old type of explanation?
Sure. I'll say that for the most part in like the crypto markets, it's somewhat useful, but there's like the activity in the options market is not strong enough to drive flows over a really, really long period of time, except for on certain expiries. So there's certain, okay, let me step back just to make this clear. So a gamma squeeze is the concept in the options market. It specifically has to do with the options market. What happens is a lot of people in crypto will buy calls. So they'll buy calls or they'll buy puts. And most of the time, there are a lot of, you know, takers in this market. So one thing about the options market, if you're hedging an option, you have if you're long an option and you're hedging an option, what will happen is as your delta is going up, in order to stay delta neutral, you have to start actually selling off, like selling down spot. Let me try to free this. Are you guys comfortable with the concept of a call and a put?
Yeah. So I guess what I'm hearing is like as people are trying to lever up in the market and speculate, they want to get longer and longer, so they're buying calls and calls and calls, and then market makers are supplying that action, but at some point there's like a breaking point where they have to like flip the script because they're out of supply or something.
Well, it has more to do with the fact that culls have, so the delta of a cull, the way that it works is the delta of a cull is equal to the amount of money, the value of that cull for every dollar that Bitcoin goes up. How much does the value of that cull go up? And so if market makers are short culls and Bitcoin is going up, what happens when a cull gets more and more in the money? So let's say you have a $50,000 cull and Bitcoin goes from 48,000 to 50,000. Your deltas are going up. So your deltas are going up. And when you buy a cull as a market maker, you short the underlying future to hedge that. So let's say you, as a market maker, you buy a cull. In order to stay delta neutral, you need to short an equivalent amount of futures, right? So you short the future against the cull. Now, market makers are not actually short, they're not actually long calls that often. More often, they're short calls. So when you short a cull, you have to be long the underlying future to hedge out that cull. So let's say that you, the market participant, go to a market maker and you say, let me buy one call for you, sir. And the market maker says, sure, I'm going to sell you one call. So when they sell you that one call, what happens is they're now short a call. So they've sold you a call, they're short that call. In order to hedge that, they buy an equivalent amount of futures. Now, remember what I said about delta. If Bitcoin goes up, then the delta of that call goes up. And so that means that they're actually getting long, they're getting shorter Bitcoin because they're getting even shorter Bitcoin as the cull, you know, gets more and more in the money. So they're getting shorter and shorter and shorter Bitcoin. Now, what that means is on the future hedge,
they have to keep longing the futures.
They have to keep longing Bitcoin in order to cover. So if that's the idea of a gamma squeeze, is that people talk about this on Wall Street bets all the time. If you buy a ton of calls on a stock, there's a lot of volatility per dollar move in that stock. So every dollar move that stock goes higher, or every dollar move Bitcoin goes higher, if market makers are short a huge amount of calls, that means that they have to buy a lot of spot in order to hedge their position. And if a bunch of market makers are fighting to get, you know, to hedge their calls at the same time, that causes what you call a gamma squeeze.
Got it.
And the reason it's called a gamma squeeze is because the rate of change of the delta. So delta is how much your call option goes up in value per $1 of Bitcoin. Gamma is per $1 of Bitcoin move, how much does your delta go up? So it's like, how fast is your delta changing as Bitcoin goes up? And so gamma is basically the additional amount of Bitcoin that they have to buy as Bitcoin goes up. And so that's the concept of a gamma squeeze, is you have a bunch of people that are buying Bitcoin and that are buying Bitcoin calls. Market makers are selling short these calls. They're hedged on the future, so they're buying futures to hedge. And if Bitcoin keeps going up, they have to buy even more to hedge. And wow. So that's a concept that, yeah, so that's what's going on. And that has occurred a couple times in the history of Bitcoin and caused like a couple of, you know, extra moves higher.
And it very well could happen a couple more times. You know, there's always like three drives or three impulses along the way. And it feels like we've kind of had our first upwards impulse, but I feel like we might have two more phases left in us. Pete, you got any more questions for Avi before we let him go?
I got one on behalf of the community, and this is something that I get asked every day, it seems like, in every single lifer call we do, is how do I decide to take profit and where do I set my stop loss? I know it's very much an art rather than a science, and it's very subjective to the individual and what you're trying to trade and what your time frame is, but is there any general rules of thumb you should or should not do?
I'll stick to the how to take profit, because the stop loss side is like a whole can of worms. And I think this will be very helpful just to broader audiences, especially newcomers. Before you like enter a really large position or a really large trade, the two most important things that you have to check in this market are, one, you have to check the futures curve. And two, you have to check the funding rates on assets. And every top, every like major top has been marked by futures curves blowing out to something like 40%. And they've been marked by funding rates on Binance and all these different alts, like maxing out. Like people are paying like, you know, 3% a day to long altcoins or something nuts like that. And so if you're a participant in this market, anytime you're like trading, you should know the most important time. The most important thing about trading is knowing kind of when to trade. And so when the futures curves are absolutely blown out, when funding rates are absolutely blown out, that's when you should be taking profits. That's not when you should be trading. That's not when you should be punting. Things will still be going up 50% a day at that point, but it'll all come crashing down extremely quickly. And so on the when to take profit side, basically what you want to do is you want to buy when not a lot of people are buying, which is actually right now. There are not that many people buying in the alt market. And then you want to sell when everybody else is extremely greedy. And you can actually judge these things. Like you know, when people say, oh, buy when there's fear, sell when there's greed, the crypto markets are amazing because you can actually see that in the futures curve. You can see that in the funding rates. Just go to bybt.com and look at the funding rates. If they're flat, like feel free to trade. If they're all red and people are paying 5% a day to long alts, stop going long alts. Like you're not going to win. It's going to come crashing down on you at some point. So I think that I'll leave it with that. That's probably the most useful piece of advice I can give newcomers that are actively trading.
That's fantastic. And that's one of my favorite sites to check out, bybt.com.
Love it. Yeah, guys, awesome. I mean, this is the sort of education that you just don't get anywhere else. Man, Avi, I couldn't thank you enough. I mean, I know how big of a couple of weeks it's been for you. We've been trying to organize this for a few weeks. And I'm so thankful, man, that we got some time from you today. So all the best to you, all the best to Block Tower. Shout out to Josh Frank for hooking us up and getting us connected, man.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thanks for having me on the show, guys. Really, really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you bet, man. We look forward to having you back. Whenever you want to talk markets, whenever you're thinking something, big announcements, you know where to come. We'll be here for you.
You got it.
Take care.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.